This is Case Closed, Crime Stories from the Golden Age of Radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me once again for more old-time radio crime stories. We'll hear first this time from This Is Your FBI, an episode from November 30th, 1945, titled The Big Breakout. In its five-minute mystery with Prize Diamond Stolen, we'll finish off with Rogues Gallery and Snowbound, their episode from May 9th, 1946.
The Equitable Society presents This Is Your FBI. This is your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. To your FBI, you look for national security, and to the Equitable Society for financial security. These two great institutions are dedicated to the protection of you, your home, and your country. Tonight's file, The Big Breakout.
All criminals suffer from the same organic disorder, enlargement of the ego, and sooner or later it proves fatal to their career of crime. For as an ancient thinker once said, he is most vulnerable who believes himself invincible. For some criminals, one heavy prison sentence is enough to deflate their ego. But in tonight's case, from the files of your FBI, Earl Dixon accepted his first set of prison bars not as a defeat, but as a great opportunity to prove himself smarter than the law. In a Midwestern penitentiary, Dixon, serving a term for hijacking, and two fellow inmates are seated in their cell after the evening meal.
Cigarette, gentlemen? Rock?
Thanks, Dixie.
Louis?
If that's the best you can do, Dixie. Of course, I'm used to lighting a Corona after a pheasant
You're
dinner.
Used to talking too much, Louis.
Somebody's got to keep the art of chatter alive in our little home.
Rock is a man of action rather than words, Louis.
Well, you ain't exactly the gabby type yourself, Dixie.
I've been interested in only one subject since matriculating here.
But you ain't talking about it, huh?
I never talk on a subject until I'm qualified by research.
When'll that be?
Now.
Oh, yeah? Then what's the title of your subject?
Escape.
Escape? Shut up, Louis.
Are you gentlemen interested?
Gee, Dixie, I don't know. I only get 3 more years here.
Just a weekend, huh, Louis?
No, it's not that, but guys can get shot trying something like that.
I wonder what your girl is doing tonight, Louis.
Yeah, what do you mean?
Just curious.
Well, I know what she better not be doing. What's that got to do with it?
3 years is a long time to sit and wonder. Maybe it'll be too late after that. What about you, Rob?
Count me in, Dixie.
Good. We'll make it a twosome.
I don't know. Wait a minute.
Yes, Louis.
What did you really mean about my dame?
I told you. 3 years is a long time.
Oh, she better not pull no double deal on me. I'm in.
Splendid.
What's the gimmick, Dixie?
Well, the doctor is on duty in the hospital until 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
He lives outside, drives home when his relief comes.
Yeah.
Lights out in here at 9. The turnkey makes a round of inspection at 10.
Uh-huh.
Tonight, when he comes around, you...
Hospital ward, Dr. Wilson. Oh, hello, Evelyn. Yes, honey, I'll be on my way home in about 10 minutes. As soon as Dr. Blaney comes in to relieve me. Huh? Oh, sure, I'll bring some. Okay. Bye, sugar. What are you doing in
here? Keep a watch that door, Louis.
Okay.
Doctor's about your size, Rock. His jacket should fit you rather neatly.
Just so it helps me drive us through the gate, okay.
There you are. And do it quickly now.
Yeah.
I'll take a look outside. Everything's all right, boys. Come on, quietly, please.
Right.
This is his car. Take the wheel, Rock. Louis and I'll crouch on the floor right behind you.
Okay.
All right. Make for the gate. Keep your head down, Louis.
Don't worry. I want to keep it.
Okay, Doc. I'll open the gate. Leaving kind of early to... Hey, wait a minute. You're not the doc.
Rock's hit. I'll grab the wheel. Pull Rock over.
Okay.
You make it?
Yes.
Hey, Rock's hit bad, Dixie.
Really?
Yeah, what can we do for him?
Throw him out.
Huh?
I said throw him out.
But he's still alive.
Do as I say.
Okay. Sorry, Rock. Gee, I hated to do that.
Consider yourself fortunate. It could easily have been you.
What do you mean?
I had anticipated that whoever drove the car would get killed.
After the jailbreak had been accomplished and the convicts had made a successful getaway, the penitentiary warden immediately contacted the nearest office of the FBI just across the state line, where Special Agent Connor took the call.
Gray Pontiac two-door sedan. License number? 7543. All right, I've got it. Which direction was it going when it left the penitentiary? Thanks, warden. We'll get on it right away.
Jailbreak, Fred?
Yes, three made the break, but one got killed.
Who were the other two?
Take their names.
Uh-huh.
Earl Dixon and Louis Muncy.
Louis Muncy. I've got them.
While I'm getting out an alarm, you contact Washington and ask them to teletype all information they have on Dixon and Muncy.
In Dayton, Ohio, a few hours after the prison break, two men walked quietly along a fog-shrouded street. They stopped in front of a modest apartment building. A minute later, a young girl occupying a ground-floor apartment was aroused by the insistent sound of the door buzzer.
Just a minute. Oh! I'm coming. Who is it?
Open the door.
Earl.
Hello, sis.
Earl, I...
Go in, Louis.
Okay.
What are you...
Be quiet. Lower that window shade, please, Louis.
All right.
Earl, what are you doing here?
Okay, Louis.
Yeah, all right.
What are you doing here? How did you get out of prison?
Quite cleverly. I escaped.
Oh.
It was a very monotonous life. I needed a change. Well, you don't seem very happy to see me.
I'm not.
Now, I asked you, Louis, isn't that a shocking admission for one's own sister?
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, Annette, allow me to present my fellow Houdini, Louis Muncy.
Pleased to know you.
Why did you come here?
Seemed the natural thing to do.
Earl, you can't stay.
Now, Annette.
I mean it. You've got to leave here at once.
Hey, what is this? I thought she was okay.
She will be.
Earl, listen to me. In the past, I've always weakened and tried to help you, always thinking maybe you'd straighten out. But this time, it's different. I'm not harboring any criminals.
I'm staying, Annette.
Oh, no, you're not.
Where are you going?
I'm calling the police.
Hey, now, wait a minute.
Hold it, Louis. What are you going to tell them, Annette? That you're turning your brother in? That you want him sent back to prison?
Yes.
Then I'd better acquaint you with just what that would mean. A man was killed when we escaped.
Oh.
Now, my dear, could you make us some coffee?
Is that teletype from Washington, Fred?
Yes, Whip. The dope on Dixon and Muncy.
What does it say?
It looks like Dixon was the brains behind the break.
Yes?
college education and always boasting how much smarter he is than the law.
What was he in for?
Hijacking. Uh-huh. He was sentenced in federal court. Suspected of a killing, too, but there wasn't enough evidence to pin it on him.
What about Muncie?
They're just finishing up on him now. Here we are. Muncie seems to be a kind of a stooge in a gang that was mixed up in hijacking, too.
He'll probably stick with Dixon, then, for guidance.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Any reports on the fugitives while I was out?
No.
They could be clear out of the state by this time.
Yes, that makes them our game more than ever.
Any leads on Dixon and that stuff from Washington?
I was just looking it over. It says Dixon lived with his sister in Cincinnati just before he was sent up. You know, he might make for there again.
Wouldn't that be an obvious move?
Well, since Dixon considers himself smarter than the law, he might think the obvious thing to do would be least expected.
Let's get Cincinnati on the phone. We'll tell him not to wait until daylight to check up, but go out right now and keep a watch on her address.
Right.
Remember this piece, Ned? How I used to slave to learn it. As I recall, it was Mother's favorite...
Stop, Earl, please.
What's the matter?
The difference between then and now, I don't want to think of it.
Dear Ned, always the sentimentalist.
Earl.
Yes?
How long is this going to go on?
What?
This staying here.
Oh. Oddly enough, I was just thinking about that.
Police are bound to come here sometime. You saw the morning paper. They're combing three states looking for you.
I know.
Oh, please, won't you give yourself up?
Oh, stop being childish.
What else can you do?
I have a very definite plan in mind. You're right about their eventually coming here, but when they arrive, we'll be gone.
What do you mean?
We still have that little houseboat on the Ohio River.
Yes?
Then I think we should use it.
We?
Yes. You and I.
Oh, no, please.
I'll need you, Annette. You'll have to drive.
Oh, why can't you leave me alone?
Very pleasant. Like a vacation.
Vacation? With two murderers.
Oh, I forgot to mention my good companion, Mr. Muncie, who sleeps so peacefully in your bedroom, will not be with us.
Do you intend to leave him here?
Not exactly.
I don't understand.
Well, he has already served his purpose.
There you see, are you, folks?
Oh. Yeah. Greetings, Louis. Well, I was just talking about you.
Oh, yeah?
Yes, I was telling my sister that we are going to take a little trip.
Oh, blowing out of here?
Yes.
Where are we going?
Well, unfortunately, Louis, you're not really coming along.
What do you mean?
I needed you for the getaway just as I needed Rock, but now your usefulness has ended.
Oh, wait a minute.
Sorry, Louis. Oh. Darling. He'll be with us in spirit.
We momentarily close the Equitable Society's presentation of the FBI file on the Big Breakout. We will return to this case in just a moment. Let's look at America through the eyes of a GI just back from the Pacific. He's flying cross-continent to his home in the East. And perhaps he's wondering what sort of job he'll land when he takes off his uniform. Well, no matter what route his Army transport plane follows, at some time in almost every hour of the flight, he's looking down on places where Equitable Society investments are helping to provide jobs for ex-servicemen. Whether his plane soars over the cattle-studded plains of Texas or the waving wheatlands of Minnesota, over the cornfields of Iowa or the tobacco plantations of Kentucky, Equitable Society dollars are right there, soundly invested with progressive American farmers to promote farm prosperity. Or take practically any industrial center in which his plane might land. Take Chicago or Detroit, Cleveland or Pittsburgh. These also are centers for the investment of Equitable Society funds in steel mills and mines, in railroads and shipyards, in textile mills and industrial plants of all kinds.
Yes, with Equitable Society dollars at work in every section of the country, and with the Equitable Society's 3.25 million members living in every state in the Union, this great mutual organization is well named the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. For since 1859, Equitable Society dollars have helped make the whole United States the land of opportunity. Yes, by serving its members for 86 years, the Equitable Society has served America. And now back to the file on the big breakout.
FBI agents make no pretense of infallibility. And although highly trained in their profession of criminal investigation, things happen so fast at times that human judgment is bound to err in one step or another in their investigative procedure. But this they have never failed to do. Readjust. The long hours of the day have dragged past, and now darkness is falling. Earl Dixon sits with his sister in the living room of her apartment.
Who's that?
How do I know?
See who it is. I'll stand just behind the door, and don't let anyone in. Understand?
Very well.
Good evening.
Good evening.
You're Miss Annette Dixon, are you not?
Yes.
I'm Special Agent Connor of the FBI.
The FBI?
Yes. We just learned that you had moved here from Cincinnati.
But why are you interested in where I live?
The automobile in which your brother escaped from prison last night was found early today abandoned just outside of town. May I come in?
But my brother isn't here.
Then there's no reason why I shouldn't come in, is there?
No, that is,
Thank you.
I have a gun here, Mr. Connor. I've often wanted to match wits with the FBI. Don't reach for yours.
I wouldn't have any wits left for you to match if I did.
I was sure they trained you to be practical.
Yes. That's one of the reasons we usually win, Dixon.
Have you always won until now?
I wouldn't say that now is exactly over.
You fellows travel in pairs. Is your partner outside in the car?
No. I came here alone.
Where is your partner?
I'm afraid you'll have to proceed without that knowledge.
He and your office must have known you came here.
Do you think so?
Yes. In that event, I think you'd better come along with us.
Where to?
My sister and I are taking a little trip. You'd be a very welcome companion.
Really?
Yes. With an FBI agent driving us in an FBI car, we should find it rather a safe journey.
At your service, Mr. Dixon.
Thank you. Oh, by the way, you wouldn't mind transporting a corpse, too, would you? It would be rather awkward leaving him here.
Louis Muncy?
That's right.
Bring him along. I'd be very glad to have his body as evidence of murder against you.
What makes you think you'll be able to produce this evidence?
This was to be a match of wits, remember?
When Special Agent Connor did not return to Dayton Police Headquarters within the designated time to rejoin his partner, Special Agent Whitman, Whitman and a police officer drove to Miss Dixon's address. Whitman is now returning to the car.
There's something funny about this, Sergeant.
I saw you go inside after you got no answer.
I found this on the floor in the living room.
What is it?
Connor's wallet.
What?
And dresser drawers had been pulled open like somebody had packed and left in a hurry.
Well,
I'd say Connor ran into Dixon, all right. And possibly Muncy, too.
And he dropped his wallet to let you know he'd been here and something was wrong.
Yes. With his car gone, that means only one thing. Let's put out an alarm on that car.
Oh, this is such a pleasure. The rolling fields, the green trees, you know? I've looked at penitentiary walls so long, I'd forgotten this even existed. Isn't it lovely, Annette?
Please don't talk to me.
My sister doesn't approve of me, Mr. Connor.
I'd say she has excellent taste.
Poor Louis. Poor Louis would have enjoyed this so. Which reminds me, I've decided not to dispose of his body anywhere along the way.
Really?
The river will be a much better place.
Bodies have a disconcerting way of rising to the surface.
Not when they're properly weighted, Mr. Connor.
Oh.
And that should offer a cue to your own fate.
Thank you.
Too bad you won't be able to enjoy a weekend on our little houseboat. You'd like to have his company, wouldn't you, Annette?
Please, Earl.
Uh-oh.
What's the matter?
Car trouble.
Accidental, of course.
What other kind is there?
That sounds like a flooded carburetor. What have you done to it?
The car stalled. Would you like to get out and diagnose the trouble yourself?
You'd like that, wouldn't you? You go ahead and fix it, and I'm warning you. If you take too long...
I won't, I assure you.
Why don't we get some word, Sergeant?
Well, we've done everything we can, Mr. Whitman. Something should come in.
And that's the toughest thing about this business. The waiting.
I know.
They must have taken Connor along as cover. If they did, Connor's driving the car.
We put all that on the alarm. Is there any more background on the Dixon family? Any place he'd be likely to go to?
I'm having that checked now. In the meantime, the clock is running out. Running out fast.
I'll get it. Police headquarters, Sergeant Gillen speaking. Yes? Yes? Where was this? Just a minute, Mr. Whitman.
Yes?
This is state police. They got something on Connor.
Let me talk to the police.
Sure, here you are.
Hello? This is Special Agent Whitman speaking. What have you got? I see. Will you read it, please? Yes? Thank you very much. Goodbye. Come on, Sergeant. We've got a definite lead on Connor. I just hope we're not too late.
Where did my sister go, Connor?
Into the houseboat.
Oh. Yeah, I guess you've got Muncie's body weighted sufficiently now.
Enough to keep it from drifting. That'll make it easier for us to locate.
Us?
Mm-hmm.
I admire your optimism. Now, if you will just drag the body out onto the deck. There, that will do nicely. And now I'll ask you to hoist it over the side.
You're really running up a big score, Dixon.
Just remember this gun. Go ahead, Connor.
Okay.
And now I suggest that we return to the cabin. Go ahead. After you, Mr. Connor.
Thanks.
Annette, will you stop that crying?
Leave her alone.
Well, Sir Galahad. Will you have a drink?
No, thanks.
Then I guess we'd better pass on to the next item on the program. That turns out to be you, Mr. Connor.
Earl, you can't...
Hold it, miss. Dixon.
Yes, that's right. And it's been rather unbalanced in my favor, wouldn't you say?
No, I wouldn't.
What do you mean?
You had that pistol on me all evening. But it didn't keep me from working.
Working?
You didn't see me drop my wallet on the floor of your sister's apartment back in Dayton, did you?
Now, don't pull that.
I saw it.
What? Annette, why didn't you...
I left it there because I knew my partner would find it very shortly and know something was wrong.
Look, Connor...
I'm just trying to get my wits on the record.
Very well.
And you were right in suspecting I caused the car trouble back on the highway.
All you gained was time, if you did.
No. I left a note under a tool when I was under the car. It must have been picked up by now.
And what did the note say?
That we were coming here.
Well, that makes you almost even.
I'd say that puts me a little bit ahead.
Annette, I think we're getting out of here.
I hate to keep piling up points, Dixon, but the keys to the car are in the river with Muncie's body.
Why, you...
Now, don't be a bad loser, Dixon.
I haven't lost.
Oh, no? Look at that car coming along the riverbank.
Where?
Oh, thank heaven. Is it the police?
It isn't even a car. That was an old trick, Miss Dixon. But I won the match.
Earl Dixon was returned to the penitentiary and subsequently tried and convicted for the murder of his fellow convict. Like all criminals, Dixon had an inflated estimation of his own ability to beat the law. And this was one of the most effective contributing factors to his inevitable downfall. No one is smarter than the law. Sooner or later, this inescapable fact is known to all criminals.
You'll hear about next week's case in just a moment. This week, at the Equitable Society, I was shown three checks that were ready to go out in the afternoon mail. One was the biggest check I've ever seen in my life. A six, followed by six zeros. A $6 million investment of Equitable Society funds in a great industrial concern, which will employ several thousand men, many of them returning servicemen. The second check was for $16,000, a loan to a farmer in Iowa who came to his Equitable Society so that he could buy a piece of land he's had his eye on for many years. The third check was for $6,000, and it was going to help an ex-sergeant of the Marines buy that little house he dreamed about while he lay in a hospital recovering from wounds received on Guadalcanal. Now he's going to own that little home with the aid of the Equitable Society's Assured Home Ownership Plan. And there you have three of the principal ways in which Equitable Society dollars are put to work. In promoting home ownership, in lending farmers a helping hand, in keeping the wheels of industry turning. And that's why we think this life insurance business we're in is a good business. We collect premium dollars from our members for their good, and then invest them in ways that are good for the entire nation. Yes, this week and every week for 86 years, the Equitable Society has been building security for you, your home, and your country.
Next Friday, December 7th, is the fourth anniversary of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Our program that evening will present a thrilling and factual account of the FBI's work on that momentous day.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Society's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Programs in this series of particular interest to servicemen and women are broadcast overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Frederick Steiner, the author was Frank Ferries, and your narrator was Dean Carlton. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. Now this is Carl Frank speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time for This is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
Another 5 minute mystery.
Detective Extraordinary.
This is Oliver Edgerton.
When a jewel collector calls a private detective, it only means one thing.
Am I right?
If you're referring to robbery, yes, but it's more than that. Can you come over? I'll make it a large feast.
Open your door, client. I'll be there to greet you.
I don't see the need of calling in a private detective, Mr. Edgerton. After all, I'm the investigator for the insurance company.
That's the whole trouble, Maxwell. You've accused me of stealing my own diamond.
Take it nice and slow, Mr. Edgerton. What's the rap?
Last night, Mr. Sloan, my safe was broken into and one of my prized diamonds was taken.
Anything else touched?
That's the strange thing. Only this one diamond was stolen.
You must be dealing with a maniac.
Maxwell here is the investigator for the insurance company. He claims he has proof that I stole my own diamond so I could collect the insurance.
Well, I have.
It's the most preposterous charge I've ever heard. Your company, Maxwell, is just trying to get out of paying me the insurance.
What's the proof you claim to have, Maxwell?
This morning, after Mr. Edgerton phoned my company to report the robbery, I was sent out to investigate.
Never mind the embroidery. What are the facts?
I went into the garden and found footprints clearly outlined in the mud. You recall it rained last night.
Yeah, I remember. Go ahead.
I took plaster casts of the prints. Here they are.
Very pretty. What's the next exhibit?
See here, Sloan, are you going to permit him to go on with this nonsense?
I'm democratic. He's got a right to talk.
While Mr. Edgerton was away this afternoon, I went to his bedroom and found this pair of shoes. You can see for yourself that they have mud all over the soles.
Watch out, the mud's falling off.
My biggest proof is this. The plaster cast I made in the garden this morning fit these shoes exactly. The prints in the garden lead directly to the library, where the safe is located.
Those shoes were not in my closet this morning. I looked for them then.
There's your proof, Sloan. Edgerton stole the diamond so he could collect the insurance on it.
What did you do before you became an investigator for this insurance company, Maxwell?
Huh? What's the idea of that question?
Just wondering, that's all. Say, did you know it rained this afternoon? The prince in the garden must be gone.
Yes, I know it rained.
Will you stop discussing the weather, Mr. Sloan, and tell this man he's crazy?
He's not crazy, Mr. Edgerton. He knows what he's doing. You didn't steal that diamond, and he knows it.
What clue did Sam Sloan discover that proved Edgerton's innocence? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
through your hat, Sloan. Edgerton stole his own diamond.
You manufactured your own phony proof, Maxwell. Edgerton's shoes can't possibly be the ones that made those prints in the plaster cast. You see, any good investigator knows that anyone walking in mud makes a bigger impression than that of his shoes. The fact that the shoes and prints match proves that Edgerton never walked in that garden. You got hold of his shoes, made plaster casts, and then put some mud on them to make it look real. You didn't want to pay the insurance, Maxwell, but you'll have to pay a lot more. A comfortable, long jail sentence.
The F.W. Fitch Company, makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams, presents Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Rogue speaking. Oh, first off, today being Thursday and things being the way they are, I want to thank my Aunt Beulah for sending me those pork chops from Barlow, Kentucky. She doesn't know it, but she's made me the most sought-after man in town. Oh, well, next week, spinach. Anyway, to get back to business, I didn't know that my old friend, Judge Robert March, was having a cocktail party the afternoon I dropped by his place to say hello. But as I walked into the patio, I was Richard the Glad Rogue. My old friend, the judge, introduced me to an amber-eyed blonde who answered to the name of Pamela Leeds, and I smartly opened the conversation by saying, hello.
Oh,
Oh, Judge March, do you mean to tell me that this is the famous Richard Rowe, the investigator?
I know it's disappointing, Pamela, dear, but nevertheless, that's the rogue.
Oh, really?
You're not really disappointed, are you, Miss Leeds? You're just amazed that a man who has done so many brilliant things could be so young and handsome.
Of course.
Well, I can see that you don't need me, Richard. I think I'll go and circulate among my other guests. I'm sure that the two of you will never miss me.
See you later, Judge. Thanks.
You can believe almost anything he says, Pamela, unless it's about himself or you.
Thanks for the tip, Judge.
Oh, would you like to take a walk around the garden? There's a bench under a weeping willow tree over there by the wall that always makes me feel very poetic.
Oh, I hate to miss that, really, but I was just leaving. I have to leave, really.
Oh, you do? Oh. Well, how are you going to leave? You have a car here?
No. No, the judge was going to send me home in his car.
Well, that's silly. Oh, yes, especially when I'm going out that way, right past your house, as a matter of fact. I'll drive you home.
Were you really going out my way?
Of course.
Well, then, I'll go with you.
Oh, that's swell. Oh, incidentally, where do you live? Well, Pamela, this has been a kind of a short date. I hope I get a rain check on that bench under the tree. I have a lot of fascinating statements I'd like to make to you.
Oh, we'll see each other again, won't we, Richard?
Mm, how about tomorrow night? It's Sunday, you know. Great nights, Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
The moon will be full. There's dining and dancing at the Macombo. And...
Oh, Pamela.
Dr. Stevens, what's the matter? Is Father...
Pamela, we've been trying to reach you.
Yes?
You better come with me, Pamela. Your father is dead.
Well, that's how it all began. We'll continue in just a moment, but now here's Jim Doyle.
I'd like to make a suggestion to the ladies. I'll bet you've often felt like singing the blues after you've shampooed your hair. The shampoo blues is a well-known theme. I've just washed my hair and can't do a thing with it. Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo is just the thing to dispel those blues. For when you use Fitch's saponified shampoo, your hair is so lustrous and easy to manage, you'll be singing praises rather than the blues. It's made from pure vegetable and mild coconut oils, so it never leaves your hair dry and difficult to manage. It makes oceans of lather, too, that cleanses completely. Fitch's saponified shampoo also contains a special patented rinsing agent. Even when you rinse with hard water, this rinsing agent ensures that no soapy film is left on your hair. It leaves your hair shimmering with natural highlights. You can use Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo as often as you like, with absolutely no fear of the shampoo blues. Ask for it at your drug or toilet goods counter. Look for the bottle with the bright yellow label. And now we return to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
I'm fairly familiar with death and most of its forms. And maybe familiarity with a man with a scythe breeds contempt. But I felt awfully sorry for Pamela Leeds when her father, Anson Leeds, died. I was more than ordinarily interested when my friend Judge Robert March called me the evening after Leeds' death and asked me to come to his office.
Richard, I am the executor of Anson Leeds' estate, and I think there's something strange about his will.
Yes?
This is, of course, confidential.
Mm-hmm.
But he left the great bulk of his estate to a nephew, his sister's child, Peter Moore, with only a $50,000 legacy for Pamela, and the rest of the estate going to the servants and various charities.
Oh, only $50,000 to Pamela, huh? You think that's a little strange.
I've been Anson Leeds' attorney, and I think his closest friend for 30 years. Rogue, I know how fond he was of Pamela, but... Pamela was not his daughter, you know. She was adopted by Anson just before his wife died 20 years ago.
Oh, legal adoption, huh?
Yes, and I'm in a position to know that Anson couldn't have loved Pamela any more if she had been his own daughter. As a matter of fact, I drew up a will for him about 6 years ago, in which he left almost all of his money to Pamela, with other small legacies to relatives and servants and charities.
Was the old gent a little flighty in his last years?
No, sound as a dollar. Extremely bright, right up to the last. And, Rogue, there was no change in the way he felt about Pamela. I know that. But I cannot understand this new will.
When was it made? What's the date on it?
Just a year ago this month. Here it is.
Mm. Oh, I see. Typed. Is this signature genuine?
Oh, of course. There can be no doubt of that. I know that fancy Spencerian signature as well as I know my own. I realize, Rogue, that I'm giving you a problem here that is based on nothing more than a personal hunch. But I would never be at ease about administering the estate if I didn't have the will thoroughly checked.
Uh-huh. Well, let's see. This will mentions only Peter Moore, that's the nephew.
Mm-hmm.
Pamela Leeds. Kate Schumann, 5,000.
Oh, Anson's nurse. Been with him for, 6 or 7 years. A fine woman.
And Fred Kraft?
Anson's gardener. Been with him, 15 years, I guess. They, the nurse and the gardener, witnessed the will, as you'll notice. I want to retain you to investigate that will for me, Rogue.
Oh. Well, Judge, ordinarily I hold my clients up for a fee. But for you, Judge, I guess I could toss you a couple of parking tickets.
Richard, this is very important to me. Will you handle it for me?
Well, of course, Judge. Now first, looks like my first move is to go out to the Leeds estate and talk with the witnesses. See under what circumstances this document was written and signed. I'll see you later, Judge. How do you do? I wonder if I could see Kate Schumann.
I'm Kate Schumann.
Oh, I'm Richard Rogue.
The investigator?
Yes.
What do you want to see me about?
Well, Miss Schumann, could we go someplace where we could talk privately?
Of course. My quarters are upstairs.
Richard Rogue.
Oh, hello, Pamela.
What in the world are you doing here?
Well, I just came by to talk with Miss Schumann.
I didn't know you knew her.
He doesn't.
No, we just met. I'll see you later, Pam.
All right. Stop by the library on your way out, will you?
Oh, sure.
Right in here, Mr. Rogue.
Thank you.
Now, Mr. Rogue.
I came to talk with you about the will which you witnessed for Anson Leeds about a year ago. Oh, cigarette?
No, thank you. I don't smoke, but I don't mind if you do.
Thank you. Tell me, Miss Schumann, who typed the will?
I'll tell you the whole story. Mr. Leeds called me in one morning and asked me to do some typing for him. I often type letters and business things for him.
Yes?
I got my portable typewriter, and before he started dictating, he made me promise that I'd never mention the fact that he'd made a new will until after he'd passed on. Then he dictated the will to me.
I see. Did he seem in good mental health at the time?
He was perfectly normal. I was a little surprised at his terms. I mean, the way he left the money. And he could tell that I was. He just told me that he had good and sufficient reasons for doing it the way he did, and asked me to witness his signature.
Uh-huh.
Then he asked me to get the gardener, Fred Kraft, to come in and witness it. I did.
He signed the will in the presence of both you and Fred Kraft?
Yes.
Hmm. Do you know Peter Moore?
I've seen him here a few times on visits. I don't know him.
Will he be here for the funeral?
Yes, he's on his way here now.
On his way here? He lives in another town?
He lives in Garden City, Iowa, with his mother. She was Mr. Leeds' older sister.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Schumann.
Who, asked you to investigate the will, Mr. Rogue?
I can't tell you that, except that it was an interested party.
Well, everything happened just the way I said it did. I'm sorry to see Miss Pamela left with so little money. I'm very fond of her.
Well, it certainly looks like everything was according to Hoyle. Thanks for talking so frankly with me, Miss Schumann. You've been a great help. I'll just check with Fred Kraft and you can forget the whole thing.
Mr.
didn't expect to see you out here today, Mr. Roach.
Well, I didn't expect to be here, Pamela. Judge March asked me to drop by and do him a little favor, that's all.
Oh, excuse me. It must be Peter.
Certainly.
Hello, Peter.
Hello, Pamela. I guess there isn't much I can say, is there, Pamela?
I know, Peter. Where's your mother? Didn't she come with you?
No, you know, Mother. She was very upset. She just couldn't make it.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, this is my cousin, Peter Moore, Mr. Rogue.
Hello.
How do you do?
I think I'd better run along, Pamela. I want to talk to your gardener. Name's Kraft, isn't it?
Fred Kraft. He'll be in his cottage. It's out and back. It's a little white cottage. He's probably asleep by now.
Mr. Kraft. Mr. Kraft. Mr. Kraft. Oh, good Lord.
Homicide. Lieutenant Urban speaking.
Hello, Urban. Richard Rogue.
No kidding. Cook up some more business for me, Rogie?
Well, you know me, Urban. The Anson Leeds estate this time. The Leeds gardener was just chopped to death with a hand axe while he was asleep. Better get your boys and get out here.
Hello?
Judge March, Richard Rogue.
Yes?
Judge... Get that will to a handwriting expert. I think it's a phony.
Oh, well, have you any evidence that...
Now, Judge, this isn't the court. This time I've got a hunch, that's all. One of the witnesses, the gardener, has just been chopped to death. Now get an expert on that will and tell him we'll call him for a report on the signature tonight. And you'd better come out here.
One of the things I like about you, Rogie, the corpses you find are always so dead.
Oh, I see what you mean, Urban. Say, from the looks of this room, the late Fred Kraft put up quite a row, didn't he, huh?
Uh-huh. But not enough of a row to get out of that couch he was lying on when he got that first blow with the axe.
Let's shake the joint down, shall we?
Uh-huh. Why was he killed?
Well, all I have is a theory. I don't want anybody in the house to know that. He was one of the witnesses on a will made by Anson Leeds. A will is in question.
I get it. You think he might have been put out of the way to keep him from testifying as to the validity of the will, eh?
That's my theory. Oh, and there's something that might back it up a little.
What?
Look, there on the floor.
Yeah?
Stub of a plane ticket. From Garden City, Iowa.
You sound like Garden City means something to you. Come on, no tricks, Rogie. What's with Garden City?
That's the town where Leeds was born and raised. That's the town Peter Moore just arrived from.
Oh, I got here as soon as I could, Rogue. Oh, good heavens.
Hello, Judge. Kind of a mess, isn't it?
Judge, are you having that will checked?
Yes, I have Carl Friend, the handwriting expert, working on it.
What did you know about Fred Kraft, Judge?
Oh, he was an old family retainer in the best sense of the word, Lieutenant. He and Anson Leeds were more friends than they were employer and employee.
How come Anson only left him $5,000 then?
I don't know. Fred was a thrifty man. He had quite a nest egg saved from his salary and from investments he had made on tips from Anson. His estate will be worth, I should say conservatively, $60,000.
Who gets it now that he's dead?
Well, Pamela Leeds. You know, she's been like a daughter to old Fred. I happen to know that she's the sole beneficiary in his will because I drew it up for the old man.
This case has more angles than a six-pointed star.
Yeah. Here's a cute one I just picked up, Rogue. Look.
A lady's wristwatch. Where'd you find it?
On the floor, right over there. It's got a broken link, like it might have been torn off of somebody's arm.
Well, whose is it?
It's engraved on the back to Pamela from Dad.
Pamela?
Come on. Let's get in the house, Urban. You'll want to question everybody, won't you?
Yeah. I've got the boys holding Miss Leeds, Peter Moore, and the nurse Schumann in the library.
While you're talking to them, the judge and I are going to be busy upstairs.
afraid I don't understand, Rogue. Just what is it we're looking for in Kate Schumann's room?
I don't know. But she's mixed up in this thing someplace. Take a look in the bathroom, will you, Judge? If you see anything the least bit out of line, call me.
Okay, Rogue.
Oh, look. Look. Ah. Here's pay dirt.
Yes?
Kate Schumann's diploma from nursing school. See where it was issued?
School of Nursing, City Hospital, Garden City, Iowa.
Yeah, the town keeps popping up, doesn't it, huh?
Yes.
Well, look, I want you to witness this, Judge. Here are two cigarette stubs. Lipstick on the tips. Fresh. No, don't touch them. Just leave them right where they are.
All right, but Rogue, you said yourself that the nurse couldn't have killed Kraft. She was in the house at the time that he was murdered.
Yeah, I know. But I've got an idea that's beginning to make sense. You got a pencil?
Yes.
Now, let me use it here. I want to copy this phone number from Kate Schumann's scratch pad. BL6791. Room 323.
You know, Rogue, we have no right...
Now, look, Judge, this is beginning to weigh on your conscience. You better get downstairs with Urban. He's a warrior, too. I've got a lot of work to do and a long-distance phone call to make. You go downstairs and tell Urban I'll be down as soon as I have convicting evidence on a murderer.
All right. I'm going to have to impress on you that I mean business. There's been a murder committed. Now, one of you knows something about it,
We don't, Lieutenant Urban. I tell you, we were all here in the house when Fred was killed. I wish you'd go away and leave us alone.
What was your wristwatch doing lying in a pool of blood near the body of the murdered man, Miss Leeds? Why was a link torn wide open on the band?
I don't know. It was on my dressing table this morning. I know it was.
Yes? Well, three witnesses saw it lying at the scene of the crime.
Look, Lieutenant, why don't you let the poor girl alone? I was with her when Fred Kraft was killed.
So was I. We were all right here in this room.
That's very interesting. All of you established your alibis for a very important time. Were you all working together? Now, one of you start talking. How about you, Peter Moore? How do you account for the fact that the stub of a plane ticket from Garden City, Iowa, was found at the scene of the crime?
Plane ticket? I came out on a train.
Yeah? When were you in Fred Kraft's cottage?
I haven't been out there in 4 years.
You may have to prove that statement more in court.
This is outrageous. You can't keep us here pounding questions at us, making accusations.
There's been a murder committed. It's my business to find out who did it. I'm going to find out. Judge, go get Rogue. Tell him I want him down here right now.
All right, Lieutenant.
Peter, please. Don't let him question me anymore.
Look, Lieutenant, it must be perfectly obvious that no one of us could have had anything to do with the murder. It was probably some transient. I suggest, Lieutenant, that you use some other means and try...
Yes, what's the matter?
The upstairs looked like a cyclone hit it, and Richard Rogue is gone.
Yes, I was gone. And I'll tell you more about it in just a moment. First, here's Jim Doyle, who wants to tell you some facts about shaving.
Yes, men, it's a fact. Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream does give as smooth and comfortable a shave as you could hope for. Plenty of research and testing have gone into the making of this fine cream, and now it combines the qualities you want. Smoothness of texture, a clean, tangy odor, and a skin conditioning ingredient for sensitive skins. Fitch's No Brush softens up the toughest beards, so your razor will glide easily, giving you a close, clean shave without scraping or irritation. It leaves your face feeling smooth and cool, leaves your disposition calm and cool, too, for Fitch's No Brush Shaving Cream is designed for sensitive skins.
For men who prefer a lather cream, it's Fitch's Brush Cream. Gives lots of creamy lather that stays moist all during the shave, giving a smooth, comfortable shave. Rinses off easily, too.
Both Fitch's Brush and Fitch's No Brush Shaving Creams come in economical 25 and 50 cent sizes. Ask for either type, but for solid comfort shaves, be sure it's Fitch, spelled F-I-T-C-H. And now we return to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
The more I looked around the upstairs room in the mansion of Anson Leeds, the more I suspected that what started out to be the investigation of a validity of a will had turned into the investigation of not one murder, but two. I made a long-distance call. Then I called a doctor friend of mine who admitted that a clever murderess could disguise the effect of morphine poisoning. Then I checked the telephone number I found on Kate Schumann's scratch pad, found that it was the number of the Hotel Splendide. I went there. In the lobby, I was stopped by my friend Todd Reeves, the bellboy.
Hello, Mr. Rogue. What are you doing?
Oh, take a ride with me in the elevator, will you, Todd? I'm calling on a guest of yours in room 323.
Yeah? What's the matter? They in trouble?
Now, just don't ask any questions. You want to make 20 bucks?
Oh, sure. Who do you want killed?
Just take a ride with me and do me a favor. Give me your passkey, Todd.
Oh, that's what the 20 bucks was for. You want me to get fired?
Oh, I'll back you up if you get in trouble.
Yeah, then I'll really get me the boot. You want me to stick around?
No, I don't. I think the less you know about this case, the better off you're going to be.
Who is it?
Shove off, Todd. I'm going in.
Who is it?
Hello. Stay right where you are, please.
What do you want?
I want to talk with you about a murder.
Oh, this is a typical rogue trick, telling us to wait here and disappearing. If I ever get... Oh, I'll get it. Hello?
Hello, Urban?
Hello, rogue. Where the devil...
Look, Anson Leeds was murdered. Don't say a word to the people you're holding there. One of them is the killer.
Right.
The will is a forgery, and I have the proof. Hold everybody until I can get there for the payoff. It'll be about 10 minutes.
All right, Urban. I'll take the party from here.
Okay, Rogue. And this had better be good.
It will be. And this concerns all of you. In the first place, I've talked to Carl Friend, the handwriting expert. That will, leaving everything to Peter, is a forgery. There are 5 copies of the will, and the signature on each of the copies is identical. It's impossible for anybody, even a man in the best of health, to write his name exactly the same way 5 times.
That's not true. I tell you...
Shut up. The signatures were made by placing a sheet of carbon paper under one authentic signature of Anson Leeds and tracing it through to the fake wills with a sharp pencil, then inking the signature in over the tracing. Don't bother denying it, Kate. Carl Friend photographed the signature under a powerful light with an enlarging camera. The particles of graphite under the ink sparkle like diamonds. Ah, that will was a fake. And Fred Kraft was killed to keep him from telling the fact that he was not present when Anson Leeds signed it.
I didn't kill Fred Kraft.
No, but you killed Anson Leeds with morphine poisoning.
She murdered my dad? He was murdered?
Yes, Pamela. I just came from the mortuary. There are obvious syringe punctures in his arm.
But Dr. Stevens...
Yes, I know, Judge. He signed a death certificate for heart failure. But I found this vial of morphine tablets in your room, Kate, and this bottle of belladonna hidden in your desk. You kill Leeds with morphine... and then drop belladonna in his eyes to dilate the pupils. Oh, that was very clever. Because the only outward sign of morphine poisoning is the fact that the pupils of the eyes contract to pinpoint size.
I killed him. But I'll never go to jail for it.
Grab her, Judge. Grab her. Get the syringe away from her.
Kate.
I was too late, Rogue.
Yeah, she was too fast for us with that shot of poison.
Kate.
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 Too late. She's dead, Rogie.
I don't understand. Why did she do it, Mr. Rogue?
For gain. You were an innocent part of the plot to kill Anson Leeds, Peter.
Peter? Oh, no.
Stop being so mysterious, Rogue. If you know who killed Fred Kraft, say so. Was it Kate?
No, it wasn't. The murderer of Fred Kraft is in jail. I put her there a few minutes ago. She was a good friend of Kate's, who was resentful of you, Pamela, and ambitious for her son to be a wealthy man. Peter, she needs you, kid. Better get down to the jail, see your mother. She loved you so much that 2 people died, so you could inherit $1 million. Well, that was the end of that case. Peter Moore's mother was tremendously jealous when old Anson Leeds adopted a little girl, Pamela, and made her the heir to his fortune. And after her school days friend Kate Schumann was installed as the old man's trusted nurse, they plotted his murder without Peter's knowledge. Mrs. Moore was in Kate's bedroom when I was questioning Kate. And when she learned that the will was being investigated and that I was going to talk with Fred Kraft about it, she killed him. She made a complete confession and was executed for the crime. I felt sorry for Peter. He's a nice kid. Pamela felt sorry for him, too. She felt so sorry for him, she's going to marry him. So he'll get the Leeds fortune anyway. You know, that hardly seems fair. Getting a girl like Pamela and all that money, too. You know, I could have gone for that Pamela. Lovely girl. Oh, lovely girl. But after all, I need another girl like Frankenstein needed another monster. In exactly the same way. You know what I mean? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. Hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and Dee Engelbach produced and directed. Now don't forget, you've all got a date with us next Thursday night. We have a story for you about an alibi that is blown up by gunfire. There are some lovely people in it. We call it the murder habit. So make a date with us, will you? Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Be with us again at the same time next week. Oh, and by the way, be sure to see Dick Powell in his latest RKO picture, Cornered, at your local theater soon. Remember, tune in next Thursday, same time, same station, when you will again hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Remember, if dandruff is your problem, ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo. It's the only shampoo made whose guarantee to remove dandruff is backed by one of the world's largest insurance firms. No other shampoo can make this statement. Ask for Fitch's Dandruff Remover Shampoo at your drug or toilet goods counter, beauty or barbershop. Fitch is spelled F-I-T-C-H.
And so ends another edition of Case Closed. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. In the meantime, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. If you'd like to help support this show, you can do so from the website as well. And for certain donation amounts, you'll even get some downloadable collections, sets, whatever you want to call them. Find out more about that on the donations page, linked to by the big red button right on the front page of relicradio.com. Thank you very much to those who have donated, and thank you for joining me today. I'll be back next Wednesday with another hour of old-time radio on Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for RelicRadio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.